to Fisher. He scores! Oh, Derek Fisher scores at the buzzer.
Bryant looking. Artest, that's a three.
Bang! Lakers by 6 with a minute to play.
Ball again to Van Exel. He fires, it'll count if it goes. It went! It went! It went! That's only right. A miracle at Boston Garden.
Hello and welcome to another edition of your Lakers Nation podcast. I'm Jabari Davis, and I'm joined by James Wells and Jordan Buscarini, and we're pleased to be back with you this week, of course. The team is off to a bit of a rough start, having dropped its first couple games by at the time of us recording this, and there are already several questions surrounding the roster, questions about the rotations, and I guess the overall strategy, I'll definitely have to ask these gentlemen. We'll discuss D'Angelo Russell's role, Kobe's style of play, what we've seen through the first couple games. And we're definitely going to have to get into Coach Scott's rotations and decision makings. We'll also catch up with Lakers Nation's Corey Hansford and Trevor Lane, to break down this week's roundtable question. And, of course, toward the end of the show, we'll take a look at the Twitter question of the week. But, all right, guys, there's no need to sugarcoat things. While I've been – basically the captain of the We Must Have Patience parade, I will admit that I expected them to look a little bit better through the first couple games, in particular on the defensive end. You can't give up 112 and 132 points respectively, right out the gates. There's no movement around the arc. I see very little communication taking place out there. The offense, just quite frankly, it looks dreadful. Far too much isolation and one-on-one plays, and folks just look like they're playing out of position and lost. I realize it's early in the season, and, we expected there to be some growing pains, but what are some of the first adjustments that you'd like to see them, this group make in terms of their overall approach to the game, Jameson?
Well, it's rough right now because there's no identity as a team. Like, we look at the Los Angeles Lakers, they're not an offensive team, they're not a defensive team. There's a team that's really confused out there on both ends. I mean, whenever you're giving up 8 points in the paint to the opposing team, it's just not going to work for you. But when you look at the team play, and especially on offense, there's just really no identity. And there's strengths. There's guys that can do things. Your starting backcourt's really good at running the pick and roll. You need to have them run pick and roll way more often. On the defensive end, there's just really no identity. There's really not a lot of good defensive players on this roster outside of Roy Hibbert, but there still doesn't excuse effort. Effort is still – when you – bring the effort as a ball player, that helps a lot. And there's sometimes where you just don't see the effort being brought at the level it needs to be brought at. So right now, it's a rough situation right now. It really is, because the coaching staff is, the fans don't like the coaching staff. Like, let's just call it what it is. The fans don't like it. Most media do not like it. And it is what it is. And right now, there's no one really going to bat for the coaching staff. There's no one saying, okay, they deserve a fair shot. No, that's not the case right now. And they're not doing themselves any favors because they don't look prepared, and that's the problem. They do not look prepared, and they don't like to make in-game adjustments properly, and that's a problem when you have a young team. Now, there are some good things I see, but right now the bad really outweighs the good, and that's just not a good thing for a young team because young teams in the NBA, especially in the Western Conference, it's a rough sledding. And when you lose the way they lost the opener and they lost Sacramento two nights after, it's not a good thing. They need to get things figured out quickly, but they got to find an identity. Who are they as a team? What are they as a team? What's going to be their backbone? And until they find that, they're in trouble.
Jordan, Jameson just brought up the fact that they look lost out there. I don't know if it's necessarily, just an effort thing. It's interesting. On the broadcast, the other night, big game, and I think it was AC. After the game, they were talking about effort. They were talking about these guys need to just go out there and kind of man up. To be honest with you, I don't necessarily know if it's more of that or more of some deeper issues that are going on that need to be addressed. What's your take on it?
It's probably a combination of both. I mean, honestly, I'll tell you what. We go back to the season opener. The thing that was so frustrating to me in that game, even though the Lakers lost a game that they should have won, for me, the most frustrating aspect of that game was the fact that the perimeter defense allowed Ricky Rubio to put up Chris Paul numbers. That's a problem. Mm-hmm. No disrespect towards Ricky Rubio. He's not that kind of guy. I mean, Ricky Rubio, yeah, he hit a lot of perimeter jumpers in that game. Do you want to know why? Because there was no hands in his face. He was given the green light because the Lakers were giving him that shot. So, yeah, to me, the perimeter defense in the opening game was definitely an effort problem. This wasn't a good defensive team last year. And I was optimistic going into the season You know, I said on the show that I believe the Lakers could win anywhere from 30 to 40 games this year. I'm still saying that they're not a playoff team, even if they do hit 40. Right now, 40 looks absolutely impossible. So, yes, go ahead and dock me for that one. I was trying to be optimistic, hoping that maybe perimeter defense had improved. In fact, it looks like it's gotten worse, to be honest with you, over there. And it's only two games, and it really, you know, being in Utah and covering the Jazz, it's something that I've had to talk to a lot of people about this past week, about the sky is not falling before Halloween, okay? You can just relax. Although there is definitely some problems with this team, organization is key here. You mentioned that already. One of the reasons why I and guys, we've talked about this, and I don't want to beat a dead horse. I was not necessarily on board with the D'Angelo Russell pick. One of the things that did kind of sway me and say, okay, you know what, maybe this was the right thing, is the fact that Byron Scott has done so well at developing point guards. Like, if you take a look at the most productive years of Jason Kidd's career, it was under Byron Scott. If you take a look at the year that Chris Paul finished in the top two of the MVP voting, it was with Byron Scott. So maybe that gave me a little bit of, okay, well, you know, you draft D'Angelo, you're going to have Byron Scott mentor and develop D'Angelo. Yet right now, he's given us nothing to say, you know what, yeah, that was the right selection. They're not even using this guy in the right way. And that's just one aspect that I know we'll talk about in a bit later, but everything from top to bottom right now is out of funk. And I know it's only the second game of the season, and you were talking about patience. There's a difference between patience and there's a difference between being horrible. Like, this team right now, there's no – they have not given any reason for Laker fans to be patient because there's so few positives at this point in time.
You know, I was going to bring this up later, but, you know, let's go ahead and talk about the Scott angle. You know, look, Scott was supposed to be the one that was able to get through to Kobe Bryant. You know, he was supposed to be the one that, you know, one of the few guys out there that Kobe respected and, you know, enough, you know, to be willing to, I guess, subjugate some of what he likes doing out there for the betterment of the team. I just don't see it. You know, I've been a supporter of Scott's, to be clear. You know, I'm generally one of those that, you know, just wants the best for the organization, regardless of whomever they hire. You know, admittedly, I thought Byron Scott would be a good stopgap, at least for the last couple years of Kobe, and that simply hasn't been the case. You know, the fact that D'Angelo Russell, you know, to start the season, you know, I'm not expecting you to completely turn the team over to him. Look, he is a 19-year-old rookie. I do get that. But if you're going to draft this guy with the second pick second pick overall, I would at least expect the ball to be in his hands for, you know, half of the time. You know, the fact that he put him off ball, to start the season, and you know, quite frankly, you know, he had only played 19 minutes in the second game up until the very end of, you know, with some garbage time action. I just don't understand what's going on there. So let's talk about Byron Scott. Is this a situation where either one of you have faith that he's going to be able to make the necessary adjustments, you know, that will put these guys at least in their best position to succeed down the road, or do either of you see a potential for a change at some point?
I can see a change as early as before Christmas, the way things are going, and definitely don't want that. It's kind of embarrassing whenever you get rid of a coach mid-season, especially before the calendar year turns over. But the one thing I'm looking at is the roster rotations just don't make any sense. I mean, when you're having Ryan Kelly at center and Brandon Bass as your backup center, that's just not a good thing when you have, you know, when you got a guy like Tarik Black who is, yes, he's undersized, but he's a center. He protects paint. He rebounds pretty well. That's who you have as your backup center. I don't understand why you're trying these power forwards out at center who aren't defensive-minded guys and that don't do anything really defensively good. So, it's not adding up. I mean, like you mentioned, the opener, D'Angelo Russell off the ball when he's a point guard. Like, his best attribute as a player right now is getting guys involved, making passes. Whether guys make or miss off those passes is a different story. But his best attribute as a player right now is being a playmaker and getting guys involved in his spots. And he's not able to do that right now because of, the type of position he's in right now. I don't get it. There's not a whole lot for me to say, hey, I need to go to bat for this guy because he's doing this, this, and this right. They're just not responding to the team. No, like, the coaching staff is not putting the players in the proper position to succeed. And when that happens, you got to go elsewhere. And if it doesn't get corrected soon, change is going to be taking place sooner than I think we'd all like. I will say this, if things keep on continuing the way they are, you're going to hear more and more coaching rumors. This guy, Tom Thibodeau, that's out there. A lot of people are very high on him. He's probably at the top of a lot of coaches' lists. When if a guy like that's out there and your team's underperforming, your team's in a big market where they can pay a big name coach, you're going to hear those rumors very, very loudly. So if things don't get better, watch out.
It's always premature to start talking about a coaching change 2 games into the season. I don't believe that we're going to see a change before the 2016 calendar year. I don't think that happens. We've talked about this on various shows, guys. When they brought in Byron Scott, when the Lakers brought in Byron Scott, to me it was almost like they talk about the NBA being a fraternity, and we've talked about this with the Lamar Odom situation. The NBA is a fraternity. It's a special one at that. The Los Angeles Laker fraternity is an extremely special group. So when you have a team, the talent, I was wrong about the talent on this roster right now. I think my expectations for them were a bit higher than what was realistic. When you have a roster of this magnitude, Mike D'Antoni, yes, you're going to be calling for his head every single night. You're going to be calling for his head if you're winning 20 games a season. Byron Scott, in my mind, was a guy that is good for the job, because I don't believe that he'll ever take you to the next level. But when I talk about that special fraternity, that special Laker fraternity, the fans are so passionate and so loyal that it's almost more acceptable for a Byron Scott-led team to win 20 games than it is for a Mike D'Antoni team to win 20 games. Does that make sense? I mean, am I off by saying that? Because I just feel like he will get more leeway than, say, a guy like Mike D'Antoni when you're going through a rebuilding process. And he's a guy that, a vet like Kobe respects. That was my take on Byron Scott from the get-go.
I slightly disagree, only because the fan base and a lot of the media members were already against the hire before it even happened. Like, it's
but who
were
you going to hire?
If it was
who was out there? Yeah, but who was out there? I mean, honestly, at that point, outside of Lionel Hollins, there was really nobody else. I mean, who else were you going to hire?
No, Jordan, I agree with you 100%. I'm just saying that the support wasn't there. Like, it's one thing if the support was there from the fans and media and whatnot, but the support wasn't even there. So him being an ex-Laker, I feel you. I understand where you're coming from, but the support just wasn't there from the fans and the media members and people around the league saying, oh, he should be the guy to be the next coach, and he'll get a little bit of leeway. There are people calling for his head last year. So I understand where you're coming from, but he just doesn't really have – there's just not a whole lot of support for him around the team, whether it's the fans, media members, people around the league, just everyone. There's just not a lot of support for him.
Guys, here's the thing. Look, I've been as much of a supporter of him as anyone else. I'm all about, hey, the Lakers family, the tradition and all of that. I'm all for that. But let's talk about right here and right now. All of that aside, he has not been effective in terms of, I don't want to say wrangling, but getting Kobe to play as efficiently, as infrequently as he probably should. That was my biggest thing. I thought that he would be able to at least influence Kobe and transition and help develop these guys. I don't see that taking place. I do agree that it's totally premature to talk about this, 2 games into the season. And when I pose the question, I realize that, I don't expect it to take place, 5 games from now. I don't even necessarily expect it to take place, a few weeks from now. But if this continues, if this trend continues with players looking completely lost, and Jordan, I think it's true. What I do think is premature is to say that you were wrong about this roster, because we just don't know, because quite frankly, we haven't been able to see what the young guys can do. I don't think that they've been placed in the right positions and given the right opportunities to succeed. So I'm hoping that changes, and everybody out there knows that I wanted to work with Coach Scott. I would never want to just say, like, yeah, get rid of him. You never want a revolving door, in the coaching position. But if something doesn't change and if these guys don't start to look like, at least like they're forming a future, it doesn't matter whether the fan base supported them at the beginning or not. It's just not working. Am I wrong?
Well, no, you're right, but let me switch hats with you for just a second, Jabari. Let me ask you and Jameson a question here, because I'm interested in this opinion. You talked about Byron Scott not getting Kobe Bryant to play as efficient as you thought he would be able to. Is the roster set up for Kobe Bryant to play efficiently at 38 years old? I don't know that it's necessarily a Byron Scott question. I think it may be more of a Mitch Kupchak question and a Jimmy Buss question. Is the roster set up to where a 38-year-old who has had 3 consecutive season-ending injuries, is it set up to where he can play efficiently? And I don't know if the answer to that is yes. That's why I'm asking you. I mean, give me your guys' opinion. Is it set up?
I'll put it this way. There's no excuse for a guy to take 13 threes unless he's hitting 8 or 9.
Absolutely.
Like,
I agree.
You know what I mean? That's on the player. Like, you know, there's only so much the coach can do and say. A lot of it's on the player, but I think I'm going to go a different direction here. I do think Kobe is still hurt from the preseason injury. I don't think he's 100% from that because we've never seen him take this many threes this early in the season, or just in general. We've never seen him take 7 or more threes in each game. Like, that's a lot. There's guys who are three-point shooters and don't take that many threes per game. So I think there's an issue with that injury that is not being reported or not being said, because when you sell for that many outside jump shots and that's not really a part of your game, something just isn't quite right. And I'm not going to blame the coach. I'm not going to blame the front office. I just think that it's tough to rely on a guy that's been around 20 years to expect starter kind of production at this point of his career. It's just not fair. Remember, he's the only guard that's been in the league for 20-plus years. Like, this doesn't happen. So it's kind of unfair for us to expect Kobe to have some sort of really good production, because this is, like, uncharted waters here.
You know, Jameson makes a good point. You know, and let's talk about Kobe's play. And, you know, this is not, blaming him. This is more just assessing what we've got going on. At one point in the preseason, there was a stat about, I think 73% of his shots were coming off passes rather than, what was an inefficient style of play that we saw last season. He was operating from the block and, looking for cutters and open guys in the corner and around the arc. And it appeared that it was, they kind of found a style that was more ideal for what this team needs. To the question of, is he set up for failure or is he set up for success with this roster? What I'd like to see is, rather than him camping out around the arc, this is granted if he's actually healthy and able to do this, I'd rather see him set up on the wing or set up in the post and, kind of allow the offense to run through him that way. It's far more comfortable for him, and it's also it would place other players in better positions. They would allow the guards, so that they wouldn't have to sink down to the corners. They could actually, be in attack mode from the top of the key. But it also would just get him away from firing up long-distance shots. What do you guys think about that idea, as opposed to just kind of letting him hang and, do what he wants to do to the tune of 4-for-20 from deep through two games?
Well, I'm all in favor of getting as much ball movement and player movement as possible, because there's just too many situations and instances where someone comes down and jacks the shot, or someone runs the pick and roll and there's no passes off pick and roll. Whatever brings more player movement and ball movement, I'm in for. So if that means Kobe goes to the post, so be it. If that means they switch up the offense, so be it. But the Princeton is not working. Like, we need to stop that. Like, the Princeton offense is not suitable for this team. They don't need to run that. They have three young guys that are playing rotation minutes for them that need to go out and run. DeAndre Russell is a guy that, if you have him at your point guard, his best attribute is to go out and run and get people going. Jordan Clarkson's an athletic guy. Same with Julius Randle. Playing a slow-down offense without any movement is not playing to these guys' strengths. So whatever it takes to get better ball movement and player movement, I'm all in favor. But my thing is this. Like I said, my biggest issue is Kobe has to be healthy, because if he's going to be playing that many minutes, taking that many shots, if he's not healthy, it's a detriment to the team, and it doesn't help going forward. If he's not healthy, then he needs to sit until he is healthy, because there's other guys on the roster that can play at that position, but you need him healthy if he's going to take that many shots out of the offense.
Kobe's never going to be healthy again. We're never going to see 100% healthy Kobe. For the remainder of his career, you're not going to see it. You're not going to. I don't know. When was the last time? I mean, honestly, when you look at his injury history, when was the last time Kobe Bryant was 100%?
Well, I was maybe 100% healthy. I'm not saying 100% healthy. I'm saying that whatever injury suffered in the preseason, that I don't think that's healed. And if that needs to be healed, if he needs a couple more weeks to get that healed, then he needs to take those couple more weeks to do so.
Yeah, but we also this is where it's really tricky with him, because I don't believe we're ever going to see 100% healthy Kobe Bryant again. I don't think many 38-year-olds who have played 20 years in the league, and then it hasn't happened very often for a reason. And when you get to that point, your body heals a different way. I don't think he's ever going to be 100% healthy. But we got to remember, he hasn't played a lot of basketball the last three seasons either, and that's something that timing is definitely going to be a problem. It's just a different beast, especially in the regular season compared to preseason, compared to training camp. And he hasn't really played a lot of basketball the last three seasons. Well, the last two and a half seasons, so.
No, I mean, and that's true. I guess, you know, my reason for wanting to see him on the block also is because I think it would just, I think it would put, you know, less pressure on him. It would put less pressure on him to, you know, get into what has to be just instinctual to, you know, to attempt to create, to attempt to play make from, you know, from the perimeter. Put simply, I do not think that he can help himself, and I understand it after 20 years of doing the same thing over and over and over again. Your body, you know, it simply reacts how it's accustomed to. So I think, you know, for me, that kind of goes along the lines of putting players in their best positions to succeed. And you know what? You know, while I don't want to point the finger at Coach Scott, I will say that coaching staff, they got it. You know, they need to do a better job of putting everybody in positions to succeed. All right, so we've talked about a lot of negative stuff. Let's go ahead and talk about some of the positive things. Give me two or three positive things, you know, that you have seen out there on the court, or things that you would like to see more of.
The one thing a couple of positive things is Jordan Clarkson. One thing, he is bringing it every night. There's no excuses. There's no, you know, there's no laps in his play. You don't have to worry about him not bringing it. He's definitely bringing it every night on both ends. He's definitely trying to bring it on the defensive end, but on the offensive end, he's definitely showing up. Lou Williams as well. I didn't think Lou Williams would be this good. He's a very solid NBA player. Guy. I think he's better than what we all thought because, you know, we saw him in Toronto last year win the Sixth Man of the Year award. But we didn't think he'd be this good. And he's been solid as well. Also, Julius Randle. Julius Randle has shown a lot of flashes of a guy that's very versatile. You know, he's able to do certain things that I don't think we all expect him to be able to do. And he's very comfortable on the offense. He's very comfortable bringing the ball up. He's very comfortable going against guys one-on-one. The thing I want to see more out of him is being able to be a playmaker out of that role. When he's bringing the ball up or when he's going one-on-one with someone, I want to see him look to pass more than look for his own shot. And also, one thing I will say, I know a lot of people are down on D'Angelo Russell after two games. The one thing I will say is his playmaking ability is still really good. There's a couple of times in that first game versus Minnesota where there's like three passes where he found guys wide open for threes. They just missed the shot. But the playmaking ability is there. It's just, you know, guys got to convert. But for the most part, there are some positives. And remember, for the most part of Wednesday night's game, that was a winnable game. That game was right there for the taking. Just didn't close it out. They win that game, the discussion is going way different. It is right now, but it is a win or lose. It's a make or miss league, and right now the Lakers have two misses. So hopefully they get things together. But there are some positives from this first week.
Yeah, I think Jamison pegged the three positives from an individual standpoint. I mean, it's definitely Jordan Clarkson. Lou Williams has been fantastic. I thought Lou Williams was the best player on the court in the opener against Minnesota. Outside of Ricky Rubio, he was phenomenal in that contest. And then, Julius Randle's been great. I think D'Angelo Russell, what Jamison touched on, the playmaking abilities are there. One of the things that makes D'Angelo Russell so unique, one of the reasons why he was the number two pick overall in the draft is because of his court vision. Now, I've talked to several scouts around the league about that, and they've said, look, his court vision is second to none, at least with this draft class. That's why he was a top two pick. And that is definitely there. I think it is going to take some time for D'Angelo as well. He's put in a different situation compared to some of the other rookies. You just got to use this guy right. I mean, if you're going to draft him number two, I'm getting off base here, but if you're going to draft him number two, you got to use this guy right. You got to play to his strengths. From a team perspective, I still believe that there is some camaraderie there, which is a great thing to see. I know it's only two games deep. And again, we tend sometimes in the media world to act like the sky is falling after only two games. If the team camaraderie sticks with it, if this team camaraderie continues to grow and it continues to be like it is right now, and I'm talking about little things, running over and helping a guy up. I've talked about Roy Hibbert and the way he came to Julius Randle's defense in the preseason against the Jazz. If that kind of stuff keeps up, that's a positive thing. And I think in all the stuff that we've talked about, all the negatives that we've talked about Byron Scott, if that camaraderie keeps up, that's a true testament to at least something that he's done that's positive. And so if you're looking for a positive, those have to be the four things that stand out to me right now.
I think those are all good things and things that can continue to be built upon. I do hope that the chemistry, you know, does maintain. That's one thing that I will say, heading into the preseason, in a training camp, it definitely looked like they were a close-knit, you know, group. And part of that comes from, you know, how much work, you know, a lot of the young guys and some of the veterans put in over the summer. Hopefully that can maintain and hopefully that can continue to be a positive. All right, I want to actually transition to the Twitter question of the week because it actually brings up something that I think Jamison mentioned. I actually like the work that Roy Hibbert has done, but I think it's very evident that, you know, he's not necessarily a guy that's going to be able to play more than 28 to 30, you know, right around that range, per night. So backup center is a big question to me. Jameson, you mentioned it earlier. I think it's terrible, the idea of putting either Ryan Kelly or Brandon Bass at the, you know, like at the backup center. I know that Tarik Black is undersized. I do realize that. But, you know, like I at this stage, you know, he may be your best option. What is the answer there? So bringing up the Twitter question of the week, again, remember each week, make sure you tweet at us. I'm Jabari Davis, NBA. Jameson is at the Jameson. Jordan is at Jordan underscore DTS. And, feel free to put in an LN, hashtag LN podcast, in your question for, even a better chance of being selected. So this week's tweet comes from at M underscore Truitt. And he basically asked, why no mention of Larry Sanders? It's funny because Eric Pincus, he's a great writer for LA Times. He also does, also works with Basketball Insiders. He's a great guy out here. He mentioned it a little bit later on, but the first tweet that I saw about it was from this guy. Once again, it's at M underscore True, and he said, why no mention of Larry Sanders? He's out there. He's available. What about that idea in terms of a backup center? Do either of you guys think that might be an option?
Personally, I don't see Larry Sanders playing again. I think he has some issues personally. I just personally do not see him coming back. But money is a motivating factor. And whenever someone calls and they offer you a chance to come back and you feel that you may be ready to come back and play in this league, and whatever issues you may have had, you may have gotten help for them. Who knows? But, man, taking a guy that hasn't played in more than a year and had issues while he was playing, I don't know if you want to bring him into this situation, because this situation doesn't seem quite stable enough for a guy that's been going through some issues. So I don't know if that's a good fit. If he was right, if he was healthy and his mind was right, oh, it'd be a no-brainer. But there's just way too many questions to bring a guy like that into this situation where there's a lot of moving parts and a lot of things going on. If he's expressed interest, that's one thing, but to go out there and go after him, I don't think that's a good idea with the situation currently constructed. But, if it's gotten to that point, you're better off trading for a backup big on someone else's team and trying to figure things out that way. Like, I don't think he going the Larry Sanders route is the right thing to do in this situation.
It's funny Larry Sanders gets brought up because it was last year in the Lakers locker room following a game against the Jazz when this question was brought up, and I was sitting next to Ed Davis at the time. We were just wrapping up an interview with Jeremy Lin, and Ed Davis looked over in my direction, and he shook his head and said, Larry Sanders isn't playing no more. And we haven't heard from Larry Sanders since. And I always thought that was odd. I remember talking to both you and Jameson about that following that game, and it was just kind of an odd question. I can't even remember how Larry Sanders was brought up, but I distinctly now remember, Ed Davis looking my direction saying, Larry Sanders is not playing anymore. That ship has sailed. This question would be easier. Maybe it would be easier to answer if Robert Upshaw wasn't playing in the NBA D League. Because, right now, it's still, this makes it even more of a head-scratcher as to why this guy's not on the 15-man roster. Still, I have no answer for it because I just don't get it. And I understand, we went over this last week with, the things that he wasn't doing after practice. But look, nobody with a straight face can look at me and tell me that Ryan Kelly is a better center in the NBA than Robert Upshaw. Nobody can. I don't have an answer to it. I really don't.
No, they can't. And, and let's be frank. Ryan Kelly had a good, preseason. I'll admit, I thought, wow, okay, maybe he can be a player in this league, especially with, someone like, Marcelo Huertas, setting him up, or when he's playing with D'Angelo. Maybe that can work. But on the defensive, but the deficiencies on the defensive end are so stark that, quite frankly, even the positives on the offensive end, I don't think that they outweigh. And, like Jameson said earlier, Brandon Bass, quite frankly, he's not a defensive-oriented guy to begin with. So playing him as an undersized center, for lack of a better way of saying it, it's just foolish in my opinion. And this kind of draws back to, if Robert Sacre can't be, if you can't lean upon him to, provide those backup center, minutes, what is he doing on the roster? And again, I never want to say take someone's job away because, look, I do understand these are people, these are their jobs, this is their livelihood. But, look, if you can, if it comes down to, this coach staff and this coaching staff feels that they're forced to play Ryan Kelly at the center against DeMarcus Cousins, and let's be fair to Ryan Kelly, that's just not fair from the start. A little kid can tell you that's not going to work. I don't know. I understand, you know, like, you know, we kind of talked in a circle on that one, you know, because there really is no answer. But, you know, I tend to agree with you. You know, like, you got, I'm definitely looking, looking down at that D-League, looking at Robert Upshaw, just hoping that at least he can develop into something so that they at least give him a shot.
Even if he cannot get things on track, it comes to the point where you either got to try him out or you got to go out and search a backup center on a different team and get that person, because you just cannot – you cannot go through an NBA season with Brandon Bass and Ryan Kelly as your primary backup centers. That's not fair to them. I mean, that's just not who they are. That's not their position. I mean, yeah, Tariq Black, who, yes, he's like 6'8", 6'8 and a half, but he plays the center position. That's what he does. You can throw him out there. But if you're not going to play him out there, you need a backup center, either give up Shaw a chance or go out and get someone on someone else's team that's a young backup big that you can trade a Sacre for or a Ryan Kelly for, whomever, and go from there.
Well, look, if you're not going to play Meta, if Meta is not going to play,
yeah,
why did you, okay, you can, look, if you want Meta as an assistant coach, you can cut Meta because nobody else in the league is going to give this guy a chance. He's finished.
Exactly.
You can cut Meta and you can bring him on as an assistant coach while freeing up a roster spot. If this guy's not going to play, why in the hell did you give him a roster spot? So he can be an assistant coach? Give him an assistant coaching job.
All right, let's go ahead and take a quick break. But when we come back, we're going to be joined by Lakers Nation's Corey Hansford and Trevor Lane to discuss this week's Lakers Nation roundtable question.
The Lakers Nation podcast will be our weekly discussion where we provide analysis on the team, a behind-the-scenes look from both practice as well as the games, and we attempt to be the voice of Lakers Nation, which we all know is the greatest fan base in professional sports. So stick with us each week.
Welcome back to your Lakers Nation podcast. We appreciate you sticking with us through that quick break. Definitely excited to be joined by Lakers Nation's own Trevor Lane and Corey Hansford for this week's episode. As we mentioned last week, and you know, like and over the course of the show, you know, each week there's a Lakers Nation roundtable question that's generated by Corey. And at this time, I'm going to turn it over to him so we can have that discussion.
All right. Well, you know, the season's finally got underway, and coming out of the season opening loss to the Timberwolves, outside of blowing the lead, a lot of the talk was centered on D'Angelo Russell not playing in the fourth quarter, being benched the entire time. So my basic question was, do you feel that it's hurting and will hurt D'Angelo Russell's development if he is benched in the fourth quarter in favor of Clarkson and Lou Williams or whatever guard they might play?
As far as Russell being benched in the fourth quarter, I think we're still so early in the season that that it's not going to be that big of a deal. The bigger issue is whether or not he's really getting minutes out there. And I think he played, what was it, about 23 minutes against the Wolves, about 26 the other night against Sacramento. So, you know, he's getting the minutes and he's getting the time on the floor. And I think that's a bigger issue rather than, you know, who closes the game and who doesn't. I think the fourth quarter minutes are going to be there eventually. Once he shows that he can handle that role of closing a game out, then the minutes will come for him. But Byron likes to really, bring guys along slowly. We saw that last year with Clarkson. And eventually Russell will get those minutes, but he's got to prove some things first. And I think that's the right way to go for right now. You know, you don't want to put too much on him at once. I would like to see some changes with the way he's being used and everything, but at the same time, you know, I don't think you have to put the pressure on him to close out the fourth quarter just yet, especially when you've got veterans like Kobe and Lou Williams who can kind of take that burden on their shoulders and handle it. I think bringing him along more slowly is probably the way to go right now.
You know, it's interesting, because obviously I can see both sides of this, but I got to be honest with you. I think because I don't necessarily see this, because I don't see this as a playoff team, because I don't see this as a team that has any, you know, it has any business in that discussion at this stage, and that's okay. I'd rather go ahead and see him out there. Whether he, sink or swim, I'd rather see what we've got. You know, so I agree with you in terms of, it doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, like every game down the stretch, and you don't have to put everything on his shoulders. I would have liked to have seen him in, you know, like in the game, you know, like in those moments, just to see how he would react to it. What about you, Corey?
Yeah, I think I lean towards Trevor's side a little bit, and partially because I saw this coming before the season began. It seemed kind of obvious to me, at least. You know, I could see a lot of games where Clarkson and Lou are just playing better than Russell, especially early on. And, you know, you're going to try to win games, especially early in the season. But I think even Kobe said, you know, after the most recent game against Sacramento, that when he was a rookie, you know, if he was only getting 15 minutes, he had to earn those 15 minutes. And if he didn't play well, he would get benched and he wouldn't play, you know, the next game or two. And that's what he had to deal with. He had to fight for everything, but he was thankful for that. And I think it's the same thing with Russell, where, you know, you can't necessarily just give him everything. He's got to earn it, and he's got to stick with it even through the struggles. You know, you might not get quite as many minutes, but that should make him better in the end, and I think that's what they're going for. I think he'll be fine in the end for it.
All right, that's fair. And, you know, we'll see how it all turns out. The discussion may be off or not, because I think, you know, as Trevor mentioned, and as you mentioned, he'll be put in the position ultimately. I don't necessarily have an issue with bringing him along slowly, as long as, you know, he's actually in the best position to succeed. We'll discuss his role a little bit later on, but let's go ahead and talk about Kobe's play. I mentioned this earlier, you know, with these guys. In the preseason, there was a stat going around that, you know, over like at one point, like 73% of his shots were coming off of passes, as opposed to, you know, the isolation style and you know, kind of hanging out around the perimeter, you know, that we've seen in the early going. You know, he's 4-for-20 from beyond the arc. Jameson mentioned that, you know, there may be something more to that injury. Maybe that's why he's settling for these outside shots. What have you guys thought about his play, and what adjustments would you like to see made, you know, moving forward?
I think Kobe's turned in a few highlight moments where he's looked like his old self. You know, we saw in that first game against the Timberwolves, he had a double crossover that he pulled off into a sweet jumper, and that was really cool to see. But the concern is that he is probably shooting way too many threes right now. I mean, he's shot at this point in the season just about as many threes as Steph Curry has, and that shouldn't happen. Especially at the percentage that he's shooting them at, I think he's only at like 25-26% from three right now. And part of that is because of the way that he's getting them. He's getting them a lot of them off of curls and late in the shot clock, where he's kind of having to force them up. And I think at this stage, that's a mistake. That's something that's got to be fixed right away. That's something where he needs to be found more on the wings for a corner three, off of a driving kick action. And that's going to help him up his percentage and hopefully save his legs a little bit. Having him come off of screens and shoot a three off of a curl is probably asking a bit too much from him right now, and it's going to kill his efficiency. Plus, it kind of perpetuates that image of Kobe as the chucker that's just throwing up these shots whenever he wants. And, you know, I don't think that's what's best for this team right now. I'd like to see him working a little bit more to get into the paint and then facilitate. When he can get, you know, free throw line and below, and then draw defenders and kick, he can be really, really effective. And I think I'd like to see a little bit more of that, as opposed to just the, you know, the ISO three or the three coming off of a curl.
Yeah, and I mean, just to add to that, like you said, it's been a lot of not necessarily pure ISO, but just kind of catch and hold the ball for a couple of seconds with a bigger, longer defender in his face, and then just, you know, try to jab step him once or twice and shoot it, instead of it being more so in the flow of the offense. And I think Kobe's a good set shooter if he's catching it in rhythm. And I think that's where the Lakers have to kind of figure out some ways. Let Russell and Clarkson kind of handle things a little bit more and have Kobe find his spots. Because if Kobe's just catching shooting in rhythm, he's a good shooter. I think the problem is he's more so just – It is more ISO than getting open in rhythm jumpers, and he's not attacking the basket. I mean, he was 4-for-4 inside the arc against Sacramento. All of his misses came from the three-point line. So it's just a matter of attacking the basket a little more, and maybe that is you know, as you said, something to do with the injury. Maybe that's lingering a little more than we know. But he's definitely got to get to the basket and get into the paint some more because he's effective inside the arc more or less. It's the fact that he's shooting so many threes. It's killing his efficiency. And it's like Trevor said, you know, contributing to that notion of Kobe the Chucker, you know, taking all of his shots at the expense of letting the young guys handle their business.
All right, let's actually talk about Byron's rotations a little bit. You know, I was being funny, but, you know, I was also being honest. You know, during the game the other night when I tweeted out, that front line of defensive front line of Brandon Bass and Ryan Kelly just makes no sense to me. What do you, you know, I do understand that the backup center position is still a question mark, but what do you guys think the answer is there? Should we expect more of the same? You know, like, should Tarik Black get more minutes? You know, like, if Robert Sacre is on the roster, is he an option? What's going on with the backup center?
You know, I think the one thing that I probably said out loud at the TV during the last game and thought in my head more than anything else was Brandon Bass is not a center. Byron's been using him as a backup center. He's a 6'8 power forward. You can even make an argument that he's a little bit undersized for a power forward spot. To ask him to get in there and guard DeMarcus Cousins, Willie Cauley-Stein, these guys that are 7 foot and up, Kosta Koufos, that's just asking too much for him. That's not his game. And you can see the Lakers are getting pounded inside whenever they run that Bass-Kelly lineup. Tarik Black isn't the biggest guy either, but I think at least his athleticism will allow him to compete a little bit better on the defensive end. And Bass hasn't really been hitting his jumper quite as well. So, I think the solution for now, I don't know if solution is really the right word, maybe the Band-Aid for right now, is to put Tarik Black in there in that role and see if that mixes things up a little bit. He's a little better roll into the basket than Bass is, and I think he's a little bit more athletic, which will let him challenge shots a little bit more. But ultimately, I think they need a rim protector for that second unit. We saw it in the game against the Kings when Hibbert was run in with the second unit in, I think it was the third quarter. They ran a lineup of Clarkson and Hibbert along with Nick Young and Lou and Kelly, and the lineup actually really worked. They started to chip away a little bit because they had that rim protector on the back line. I like the second unit that the Lakers have, but the Bass-Kelly thing just isn't working. They need to find themselves a rim protector that can really shore things up back there.
Yeah, and in fairness to Byron Scott, I do understand his thought process behind, well, if we don't really have that good defensive center, we might as well just try to outscore people in the second unit. And if you've got talented guys on the second unit, you know, that's usually not the hardest thing to do. So I understand his thought process behind it, but it's just not working. And Bass really hasn't looked good even going back to the preseason. He's really, really struggled. He's not knocking down his 15-foot jumpers, which had been his calling card basically his entire career. And he clearly cannot bang the guys down low. So I would like to see Tarik Black get a chance, at least just to try something different. He's undersized as well, but he's used to guarding those bigger guys. You know, he's used to being down low. That's his game, whereas Bass is a little bit more of a perimeter-oriented power forward, and as Trevor said, slightly undersized for the power forward spot. I'd like to see Tarik at least get a shot because clearly something isn't working. Things have to change, especially coming off the Sacramento loss. Something has to happen, and Bass and Kelly together just is not working. So you've got to try something. And if that ends up being Robert Sacre, there might be some more fans starting to revolt and get angry again. So I'd at least like to see Tarik get his shot first.
All right. Yeah, agreed. Yeah, and, you know, again, I also feel obligated to say we all love Robert Sacre. He's great in the locker room. He's obviously, you know, well-liked, you know, like amongst the team and all of that. But, you know, we got to be honest and, you know, fair about assessing, you know, what he brings out there on the court. All right, guys, before we run out of time, I also want to talk to you guys about D'Angelo Russell's role. We kind of touched on it, you know, at the start, You know, it seems like both of you guys are comfortable with what, you know, with, you know, like the amount of pressure that's being placed on them and the overall playing time. But one of the issues that I've had is, while I understood where they were coming from in terms of playing them off ball so they can kind of get, you know, generate offense that way and get a shot going, I'd actually like to see what he can do as a playmaker. You know, we've seen bits and pieces of it. We've seen some good, you know, in terms of, you know, finding guys, you know, with great passes. We've seen some bad in terms of, you know, trying to force the issue, you know, in the limited amount of time that, he has the opportunity to do so. What would you guys like his role to look like moving forward over these net, you know, let's say the next block of 10 or so games?
You know, I'd like to see more of a continuation of what he did against Sacramento, where he was more the lead guard. He was bringing the ball up the floor and creating plays rather than what we saw against Minnesota, where he was pretty much just off the ball, standing in the corner and waiting for the pass to come to him. I think, you know, just stick him in the corner is not playing to his strengths at all. And you can tell he's, you know, from his comments after the game, he's a little bit frustrated because he's seeing, you know, Karl Anthony Towns blow up. He's seeing Joel Okafor blow up and Moutier, all his contemporaries are blowing up out there. And so the spotlight kind of comes to him and people are saying, you know, hey, you know, what's he doing? Where's his big game? And I think the only way that he's going to really get comfortable and feel like he really gets in the flow of the offense is with the ball in his hands and to put him in some high pick and rolls, give him some opportunities to show his skill set. And I think the best way to do that is to, again, put him in the high pick and roll, let him create, and then make reads from there. And he's going to mess up sometimes. He's going to make mistakes. He's going to throw the ball away. There'll be some turnovers. He's going to have people pick him. He's going to have different things happen. But I think you have to let him work through some of those issues and let him learn on the fly. Because at the same time, even though he's going to have some turnovers and things, he's also going to have some great plays. And that's what's going to really, you know, develop his confidence and let him learn and grow as a player.
Yeah, and just to add on to that, I think they really need to make it clear and drive it home to him that this is his team. He's the point guard. He needs to be the guy to take control and get guys where they need to be and run the offense. Because with the personnel that the Lakers have, it would be very easy for a rookie to just kind of fall into the background because guys like Clarkson and Kobe and Randall and Lou Williams and Nick Young, they don't have a problem if they get the ball attacking and being aggressive. So for someone to be a little bit unsure, it's very easy to just fade in the corner because there's so many other guys who are comfortable attacking and making plays for themselves and for others. So I think they really need to drive it home that this is Russell's team to run, and he needs to be the guy to kind of take control. And that's hard for a rookie sometimes, but that's going to be his job, his role going forward. And Kobe himself has even spoken about him needing to take a step back and allow the young guys to step forward and run this team. And I think that's mainly on Russell, or going to be on Russell, that he needs to be the guy to, you know, be in control. He's the quarterback. He's the driver. He runs the ship. And I would really like for Byron Scott and the coaching staff to drive that point home that it is on him to run the team and to really be the leader, the upfront guy.
Fully agreed. Absolutely agreed. And again, I do think that it will come over the course of the season, but I'd also like to see, you know, the coaching staff encourage that. But I don't, you know, again, I'd like to see D'Angelo go ahead and take that step forward. You know, one of the things I really liked out of him in the, you know, even during the draft process and then obviously after they went ahead and selected him was the confidence that he seemed to bring. He doesn't seem to be an individual while, you know, as you mentioned it, Trevor, you know, he expressed not necessarily frustration, but he expressed, you know, his opinions about it. He doesn't seem like a guy that's going to be, you know, lacking for confidence anytime soon. So I'd like to see him go ahead and take that step forward and assert himself in that role as well. Absolutely great stuff, guys. I really appreciate you joining. Before you get out of here, can you go ahead and let the folks know if you got anything coming, you know, any projects coming up, as well as where they can follow you on Twitter?
Sure. On Twitter, you can follow me at Trevor_Lane. And one of the things that I try to do as often as I can throughout the season is post highlight vines during the games. So you can follow those on there. They also get published to LakersNation.com. And I'm also going to be writing up a sort of week one review piece coming up in a few days here after the game against Dallas here on Sunday. So I'll have that coming up as well. That should come out sometime early next week. And, I'll analyze where we're at so far and see what we can do going forward.
And then you can follow me on Twitter at @dcoreyh. And the most recent piece had talking about Anthony Brown and hoping to get Anthony Brown a spot in the rotation since he is legit the only good perimeter defender on this team. So that's something that I came out with right before the start of the season, I believe on Tuesday. So if you want to go and check that out on LakersNation.com, that's there. Other than that, not much else. So.
And what about on Twitter?
Yeah, on Twitter at @dcoreyh, @dcoreyh.
All right. I can't stress enough. These guys are great follows on Twitter. Be sure to check out, like they mentioned, LakersNation.com for all of their material. And we look forward to having them on throughout the course of the season. Thank you guys for joining.
No problem. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
All right, good stuff with those guys. It's definitely it's good to see that they share, our passion for, the way things are going at this point. But before we run out of time, let me go ahead and get some final shots from you guys. Jameson, why don't you lead off?
Well, as always, I want to thank, everyone for listening, and that's always a pleasure. And people who retweet it, share it, all that good stuff. We'll definitely want to thank them. But also just want to appreciate patience. I understand that, as Laker fans, we've seen – great moments, while we've all been alive. But right now, I want to stress patience because it's going to take a little bit. It's going to take a while. You have a lot of young players that are trying to figure out the role that they're in, trying to really figure out the league, in a sense. So I want to stress patience and just, there's going to be some bad times, but there's going to be some good ones as well. Wednesday night, for the most part, before the end, was a pretty good time. So hopefully we get more of those results. But patience is going to be key. Patience with D'Angelo Russell, patience with Julius Randle, patience with Jordan Clarkson, just in terms of them figuring out how to play with each other and build that rapport with each other. That's going to be key, but there's going to be patience needed. So there's going to be some bad moments, but everyone needs to relax. It's not going to be a playoff team. It's not going to be a 35 or 41 team. We just all need to relax and just hope that the players get better. I always say it day by day, game by game, week by week, month by month. That's all we can stress for right now.
I think that's fair, and just playing devil's advocate, I think everybody will be able to be patient as long as they see some progress along the way. You're exactly right in terms of day by day, game by game. As long as you see progress along that way, you can accept and to kind of look past some missteps, and hopefully those young guys can can do that. Hopefully those young guys can be put in the positions to do that. So I agree with you, Jordan. What's your final shot?
You can echo what Jameson just talked about as far as patience go. I mentioned this last week, wins and losses will be arbitrary numbers this year. Even Jameson threw out the numbers, 35 to 40 wins, that was a lofty expectation in line at the beginning of the season. Even if you hit those numbers, you're not a playoff team. So, continue to understand that technically you have two top 10 picks on this team in Julius Randle and D'Angelo Russell. Based off of the injury that Julius Randle suffered last season. He looks fantastic. He looks like he's in shape, and I think that we got a true stud in Julius Randle. D'Angelo Russell, maybe the expectations have been a little bit too high. Maybe I set my own personal expectations for D'Angelo Russell a little bit too high, hoping that he would come out and look every bit the part of a number two overall pick. Unfortunately, he has had his moments where he has set up teammates, and they just have not been able to finish. So his assist-to-turnover ratio should look a lot better than what it is right now, based on the production that goes around him. And I think that's also something that's important to talk about as well. As we've talked about several times on the show, I was an Okafor guy. I've been an Okafor guy since I watched him play in high school. I've been an Okafor guy. But I do believe that D'Angelo Russell, when the situation is called upon, I do believe that he'll be able to be that court vision setup man that we all envision him being. So I think patience is definitely going to be key. You have to try to pinpoint positives. We can't look at this team and just continue to dwell on the negative because all in all, we know that this is not going to be a playoff team. So let's try to pick out the positives. Let's continue to hope that we see the athletic growth of Jordan Clarkson. My goodness, we didn't really talk about that too often in this show. And just going back to the last couple of games, I mean, his ability to get to the rim has been very, very impressive. So there are positives. From a fan's perspective, look, we get 82 games a year, so you might as well sit and try to find positives for the growth of this team rather than just nitpick and continue to dwell on the negatives, because there will be more negatives than positives.
You know, again, I cannot argue with that. You know, both of you guys are, you know, pretty much saying, you know, my general thoughts. And so I'll just say this. My final shot, you know, to piggyback what each of them just said, is I'm just ready to see what the young guys can do. I'd like to see them playing 30-plus minutes per night. I know that you can't just totally, you know, turn over the reins completely, you know, to D'Angelo Russell, but I'd like to see that freedom, you know, increase over the course of the season. You know, we know what you're going to get out of the vets, and, of course, you know, you appreciate all of the positives, you know, that they add. But to be honest with you, the focus of this season has to be about the future. So, like, you know, I know that, you know, just throwing a number out there, you know, like, you know, it's a situational thing. But like I said, I'd like to see each one of those young players playing 30 minutes per night. I'd like to see Anthony Brown out there a lot more. I'd like to see what we got in Larry Nance Jr. You know, you may as well go ahead and play for the future, because like you said, you know, wins and losses, you know, like, you know, that total is going to be an arbitrary number. It really is insignificant. You know, like anybody that went into this preseason or into this year thinking, you know, oh, they might get the seventh seed, well, quite frankly, you had unrealistic expectations. That being said, since we can pretty much all establish that this is not a seventh seed team, especially in the deep Western Conference, but even if they were in the Eastern Conference, this isn't. Let's go ahead and play for the future. Let's go ahead and see what these guys can do. Turn it over and let them go. I honestly think that's the best course of action. You know, as Jameson mentioned, we definitely all appreciate each of you taking the time to tune in. We appreciate all of the feedback. You know, remember you can you know get all of us on Twitter. Remember please check out the site LakersNation.com. Everybody there is a fan not only of the team but a true fan of the sport. You're passionate just like each of you, and while we're never all going to agree, you know, at the end of the day, we're all just doing this because we love the game of basketball and because we are, you know, in support of, you know, obviously the Los Angeles Lakers. So for Trevor Lane and Corey Hansford, for each of these fine gentlemen, Jameson Welch and Jordan Buscarini, and for LakersNation.com, this is your Lakers Nation podcast. Thank you very much for listening.